It is really hard to believe that we are 25% of the way through the year. I don't know about you all, but I swear I was just lighting firecrackers across the, in the driveway, and it's April. And I think the older I get, the faster time goes, especially when we're having fun with kids now. Emma turned 13 this weekend, and Parker 16. I can remember. Oh, I can remember when they were little babies, and I thought it was going to be forever, and here we are. Wherever you are, it can feel like you're stuck in it. It can feel permanent. It doesn't have to. That's really what Q1 is about, is shifting, learning about your mindset and your momentum, right? That you own your stories and you own your state. And if you own your mindset and you own your momentum, your stories and your state, and they're positive, your strategies, the balance of this year are much more likely to be positive. So I was doing some research this morning. Yeah, this is what I do when I get up at 5:30. I geek out on neuroscience. So here's an experiment. We're going to talk about this at the end of the call, but we're going to talk about the power pose experiment. So there's some really cool research around posture. Did you know that if you stand, you guys can see my cute outfit, no one ever does in my little house all by myself. If you stand, and you can't even see because of my big sleeves, if you stand in a Superman or a Superwoman pose for 2 minutes solid, your brain naturally reduces the level of cortisol. It thinks you're confident and safe, so we don't need to be in that posture. There's a lot of really cool things, but here's the one as we frame today's conversation. If you stand in the Superman or woman pose for 2 minutes, you are 33% more likely to make a bold decision. What is it that you will make every single time that you choose to uplevel your success? Any guesses? Out loud guesses? What do we have to make?
Bold decisions.
Thank you, Matt. So appreciate that. Yes, Matt gets a whoop whoop. We have to be willing to unmute and speak up. We have to be willing to raise our hand. We have to be willing to look at our client base and ask ourselves with a really honest inventory, how is my client base performing? Not relative to rent and ramen for those of you who are past it, because we get stuck in that mode. Now, right, that was the bar, rent and ramen. And then we hit that bar and it stays the bar instead of, right, setting a new bar and a new bar. And that's what this quarter is all about. It is about defining and delivering your value proposition. That means you have to get clear on who the client is, what the differentiators are, what services, ideally, what specialized services, right, as you develop that mastery, right? Start with model meetings and surges. Or surges in five-star service models, right? Go deeper. The goal is really to put yourself in a position to align your decisions with your desired reality. I've been talking a lot on social, particularly with our larger clients, right? Those firms scaling into the, billions and beyond. The conversation I'm having with all of them right now is really the thesis of this call today is success at the next level means that we have to uplevel, right? Uplevel our operating system and our decision-making system. And it ultimately means that success at the next level is more about making hard decisions than it is about making hard work. And as we go through the client, some of the client profit about profitability today, you're going to start to see how that shows up in a client base and the impact that it has. So this quarter, we're shifting from setting you up from success to really define and delivering the value proposition in a way that aligns with your desired reality. So we're going to make sure that you clarify your ideal client base. You're going to clearly define and deliver deeper value, and you're going to build a hyper-efficient delivery system. Again, the level or the lessons that you use to do this will vary, right? If you're in year one, it's getting clear on your client or your differentiator. Right sizing your client base and then right really positioning yourself to tell that story, update the website, update the service model, make sure staffing's in line, right? But year one, get those core nuggets, clearly defining and delivering value, right? That is telling your story. That is the website. That is model meetings and surges, like, and then the delivery system is things like surges and service model. How do we consistently and reliably deliver services Even though the self in a smaller practice, you as the advisor are a huge part of the value. How do we start to build a delivery system that can deliver that value far less dependent on us? And if, like Adam, we were to bring in another service advisor, it would be built in such a way that we could plunk someone else in, not right scramble and start from zero. So those are our focuses this quarter. Again, if you're in year three or you're a leader in right or a leader's team and you're in this call, you might be doing client base at a deeper level. You might be really targeting some specialized service models, right? And scaling that really efficiently. If you're in year one, you might be picking your niche and figuring out how to tell that story to the marketplace. So that's our focus this quarter as we go through. We want to curate a profitable client base. So here are the four growth inhibitors. When I talk about, I just did some keynotes at Orion on scaling from millions to billions and from billions to 10 billions, right? So larger firms. Here are the four growth inhibitors of all firms, according to the research right now: strategy and leadership. So all that stuff that we talk about, right? We're kind of stumbling around in the dark, and there's a lot of complexity, dilution, and inefficiency, right? We're really diluting both margins and quality of life, but we're also diluting value to clients. Two, which is really the theme today, is advisor capacity. If you look at high growth, high happy firms, you're going to see that they're maximizing capacity. As firms grow, that well-being score maxes at 1.5 million, drops from there, and never recovers. Not because it has to, because we choose to, because we compound that problem, right? If we have an advisor at 70% of capacity and then we hire the next advisor and we hire the next advisor, we now have given up 90, like literally a full-time person. That's going to be a massive hit to productivity, right? And margin. So it's really about optimizing the income engine. For those of you where you're the only advisor, you are the income engine. So people, process, and platform become critical along with right productivity and positioning. For those of you with an advisor or advisors, this is where the compounding, the complexity, and the dilution kick in, right? So you want to make sure you have a model for each advisor, maximizing and optimizing capacity. And then, of course, lead gen and closing rates. Right. The reason that Adam's growth engine works so well is not only does he have the inputs, right, but he can get them through the process, right? He can generate the leads and he's got an exceptionally, right, an above average closing rate because of the strategies that he uses. So it just goes back to, right, the best way to make money is to not lose big chunks of it. So today we're going to talk about the one that's going to be most impactful when we come to that value proposition. And here are the three things that we talk about a lot this quarter.
Oh, there's my name.
There's your name. Sorry. You're usually in chat, so I just get quiet.
That's where I was, yes. So one of my favorite conversations that I always have with advisors is when they're having, they're early on in their journey towards kind of waking up and realizing, and first of all, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, or I should say, been there, done that, have the crappy P&L to prove it. We look at our client base, we figure out that I'm not where I want to be right now because I'm spending an inordinate amount of time with lower profitable clients that don't meet my client profile. And I've already given them a decent amount of service up until this point, and they're not charging for it. So rather than raise their fees up to where they should be, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out and hire a service advisor for 90 grand a year and make an already really crappy P&L even worse. What makes sense in that equation? And when I lay it out that succinctly and directly, we all were like, well, of course, that why would someone do that? But advisor after advisor after advisor will go through that decision-making matrix because to what Steph talked about earlier, the fear that we have of raising fees and or taking away levels of service to be more in alignment with where we want to spend our time as advisors is harder than just, oh, that little guy, pay no attention to that little guy. I'll just hire a service advisor to handle those little guys or little clients. And the challenge is that, right, if you do A and B right here, right, if you have your ideal client profile, but then you've got this hodgepodge of accidental success in the form of either not profitable clients or maybe less profitable than what your ideal client profile is, the easier solution at the time is I don't want to tell them no. I still want to keep them, but I don't want to work with them. So I'm going to go hire someone else. But when I run the math, I'm like, where on a profit loss does that make sense? it doesn't. And so now we have to ask ourselves the question yeah. of, well, what are the options there? And the options, really, if we're just being very true, like, I'm not saying that you can't hire that service advisor to do that. We just have to know that in order for us to protect the profitability that we want as business owners, right? Forget the term advisor, forget calling ourselves as advisors. Let's just all agree that we are business owners. If we want to protect the profit margin that we have set for ourselves as business owners, and we're going to make the cognizant decision to go add, just pick a round number, $100,000 of expense to our business, we've got to do something on the revenue side as well. You can't make up profit in volume. So we can't continue to work with low profitable clients thinking that if I just get more of them,
you're going to grow your way out of it. Yeah.
Will increase. Yeah. You can, like, we're not private equity. We don't have a bunch of VC dollars behind us where we're trying to get our MMR up to the point that someone will buy us and help bail us out of our unprofitable problems. So we don't have that luxury. So we have to start from the beginning, understanding from again, all credit to Mike Michalowicz. It's one of those like Captain Obvious statements when you read the book Profit First and realize that what a novel idea. How about we build a business that starts with our profitability first? Right? If we're doing that from the very beginning, we have to align both. We have to align the expenses and the revenue and create a business model where we meet the client profile, we're aligning the service with the fees, and then we collectively, us as advisors with the clients that we still choose to serve, and if we are growing a firm and bringing in another advisor, that advisor is enjoying a profitable relationship with their clients while maintaining profitability in the firm.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't do too much for too many, for too little, for too long without ultimately feeling the impacts of it. Even if you're bringing on good clients that are profitable, what you'll notice, as Adam can attest to, is you can still grow yourself broke because the lifetime value of that client happens over a lifetime. But then you end up with an onboarding and we go, oh, let's hire another person. And we've got this growth. We got to hire another person. And that's how you start to see margins erode. If you look at the growth charts, right, the breakpoints go from like 300 is sort of that rent and ramen like threshold. Then it breakpoints again at about 750. It breakpoints again at about 1.2. 3.3, right? 5, 8, 13 million, right? And you see profitability go like this. It goes up and then we make an investment and it goes down. But we tend to do like the go down and then we make an investment and it goes down, right? So we actually get declining margin as we grow. And it's really interesting because most businesses as they grow have improving margin, not declining margins. And it's because we work over the dilution by hiring the next advisor and the next, and now we got people to manage and we don't know what they're doing, or we got to stop and we got to build spreadsheets to figure all that, right? Like that, then now not only have we built in productivity dilution of our income engines, we've got management on top of it, right? Which tends to dilute us unless you're big enough to go hire a COO or an ops manager, which, right? If you're doing, like, therein lies the problem, is you get pulled into managing the business. So here are those wagon wheels, right? If you want to be a Ferrari, you can use that, right? If you have revenue, services, capacity, and profitability, and they're not balanced, how's that ride going to feel, right? If they're all working together, coordinated, and aligned, it's going to feel great. But what if they look like this? Who wants to ride in that car? Like, it's like it's a really bumpy ride. And that's what you're experiencing. You have some clients that are great in terms of revenue and profitability and others that aren't, right? So we put them all in the wagon, and ultimately the fees that we charge, right, are the horses that pull that carriage. So it's about bringing alignment, right? Because if we don't, then things get out of whack. So in service model and in right-sizing client base, you've heard us talk about this, but this month we really wanted to kind of unpack it a little bit more deeply. Adam, I don't know if you remember this, but I think at one point, I think it was not last year, the year before, we were on a call and you were like, this is probably the single most impactful thing that we do. And we do a lot of impactful stuff. But the issue is, if you multiply an inefficient product or system, you're going to multiply the inefficiency. So right sizing your client base in year one, getting that clarity along with who is the client going to be going forward, are honestly your two biggest decisions, right? What do I do? Like, how do I evaluate the client base that I have? And then based on that learning, who do I want my clients to be? And then that will tell you, do you need a fee transition? Do you need service transition? Do you need to build your service model, right? Do you have that container strategy for certain clients? You can do the baseline model and automate a lot of stuff, right? So this tool will really, and we're going to go through a couple today, start to show you where, right? If you look at, think about the dashboard lights, where are the indicator lights coming on in your practice? So we want to look at client fit relative to the ideal, not relative to all money is good money. We want to look at revenue, right? Like how much is each segment or tier creating? What's capacity? What are the services and how long does it take, right? What's the labor cost and the productivity cost of platforms, et cetera? And then ultimately what's left is the profitability. How efficiently we went from retaining that client to delivering the services determines ultimately what's left. So the goal of this tool is to estimate profitability by segment because we want to treat all clients fairly, not necessarily equally, Kevin, right? Just because grandma's been here for 27 years or someone is the kid of a really wealthy client doesn't mean they need the same service model, right? We want to project cumulative client advisor time needs, right? Matt, we're going to talk about yours. Like, hey, right now is good, but what about year three, year five? Am I going to need a service model? Matt can do those projections now, pencil in what someone's going to cost him. And then at his current trajectory, really way in advance of someone going, oh, wow, this didn't work out so great. He could be like, wow, I'm just not quite there yet. And as you'll see in some of the examples, he might define, there's four different ways. I actually defined them for you. I'm very excited about this, right? Because we talk about them all the time. I actually put them on a slide and put them in boxes so we can remember them, right? There are four basic ways that you can right size your client base. And after that is really where you want to focus on who are the clients, what are the services, right? How am I going to grow? If we don't do that first, we just call me and Adam later, right? And if you're calling me later, you're spending a lot more money to fix the problems. Trust me, like this is the biggest bang for the buck versus, right, getting to 100 million or 300 million or a billion and calling me up and saying, ah, I have all these problems to fix because that becomes a six-figure problem to solve annually, right? Not to mention all the money that you lose along the way, which in some cases is an awful lot. So here's an example, Matt, we're going to do a case study. So Adam and I are going to talk through these. I want to get everyone's feedback and then we're going to do Matt's, so we can all start to see, right, Matt, you'll also start to see how to frame, you know, kind of how do we look at these and how do we frame them? So when you look at this, first client profitability analysis, right, I just framed it out a little bit. We have basically a $540,000 practice with about 80 clients. Average revenue per client is $7,287. We're in the hallway at the conference and I look awesome, right? I get a gold star on my badge. I got an almost $1 million practice. Average client is $7,000. Go me. What do you not get from the gold star story? What's missing here? A couple of very high level observations, right? We would dig in deeper, but
you're barbelled.
Yeah.
And your tier three and four is not that great.
Yeah. So in the aggregate, it looks great. But if you look at tier three and tier four, I'm going to go with they're not profitable. And here's why. At 1,000, so this is using an even weighting. So this is your standard cost accounting, right? All expenses divided by all clients. If you divide that by revenue, it very likely looks a little bit different. Right. And then that gives you right baseline. You're basically going to end up at like zero or a little bit under. So your tier two client, basically your core minimum. Think of that as like your floor. In an ideal world, you have an ideal client and some of them are just going to be bigger. Right. If you have a $10,000 minimum and somebody comes with 25, you say, thank you. You don't go. You're not in there. So your floor rate is typically in an ideal model going to be your tier two. And then tier one is right at the next tranche up, like right the five, the double stars, if you will. And to Matt's point in this example, our tier two and tier three, right? The lion's share of our client base is either no profit or very low profit. It's also the bread and butter. So can we just instantly carve off? Can we just transition out those clients next week? No, we cannot do that because Bob won't be getting paid in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that becomes a problem. So many of you will identify issues in your client base. And this is where we are very different than a lot of consultants. I have never said, draw a line, right? Send them all a letter, too bad. That's just not like you at one point said, hey, I want to help and dot, dot, dot. And you're entitled to learn, grow, and raise your fees. If you were in a law firm or a planning firm and you got better, they'd raise your fees over time. In our space, because AUM as a percentage has been the revenue model, we've let the markets take care of it for us, which is cool in a lot of senses, but it's utterly lacking in business discipline. And we feel that in those years when the market takes it back and all of a sudden it's like, wow, where did my margin go, right? What the market give us, the market take away. Over time, it tends to work out. But when you're bread and butter, if you got rid of them, if you could not operate without your unprofitable clients, that tells you you have a major anchor on your practice. Like one of those wheels is just broken off. Again, we can't fire them all, and we don't necessarily want to, but we do ultimately want to raise the bar to a minimum threshold for profitability and revenue, right? So we know we need to look at that. What might a decision from that be? No new tier three and tier four clients, right? So first thing, stop the damage. Don't make it worse. Just stop making, and again, this is where those KPI worksheets, even the very basic revenue per client, right? Revenue per advisor metrics are very helpful because revenue goes up, but my revenue per client, if my average is 7,287 and I take on one of those two tier two or tier three clients, my average drops. That's where you draw in a model world. That's where you draw the line for your minimum, right? What your current average is should be the new minimum or something around there, because anything below that is going to drop and dilute your average, not the goal. Right. So in this example, we might just say, hey, we have to develop a strategy for those bread and butter clients. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But henceforth, our new minimum, because we want to bring that average up, if their goal is 10, right? Our new minimum is 750 or even a million, right? I'd probably push it to a million because it's at 7,287. Right? I'd stand in a power pose for 2 minutes, a couple of days, and then I would just make the decision genuinely. So what we have here is, you guys don't know this because you don't know who this is, but I happen to know that, right? Because this is the power question you will all ask yourself, is capacity reflective of reality? So this says this advisor is only spending, right, X percent of their time in year one on clients, and that advisor will tell you, I'm so crazy busy, I can't take it anymore. Right, because they're servicing, 70, 80 clients inefficiently, unprofitably, right? So the more of those clients take on, does it get better or does it get worse, Matt?
If you take on threes and fours, it's worse, yeah.
Yeah, so we like to call that lipstick on the donkey. It looks good when you run around the conference hall going, hey, my average revenue per client is $7,500. And I'm making it worse every day because I have no discipline and I don't know how to say no is what should be on the little asterisk footnote on those name tags. When you have those conversations, it should be like a little pop-up bubble of truth above your head. Can you imagine what those conferences would be like if when someone said, hey, what's your practice like? And they were like, oh, I have 150 million. And then if the truth bubble was like, and I'm miserable and my wife doesn't like me and my staff, like we want the truth bubble to be good. We want to run a client profitability analysis and feel proud of the value that we're delivering in exchange for the value that we're receiving. Sometimes when we don't know what our service model is, or we haven't defined the niche or the differentiator, and we haven't packaged the story, when the brain doesn't know how, it'll stop you from making the what decision. Hopefully what you guys are seeing now, right? When you get that clarity and then you get this information, it makes it a lot easier. When the vision is clear, the decisions do get easier. Yes, so Steph, can you, yeah, go ahead.
All right, a quick question. How did you come up with the minimum fee again?
So I look at the average revenue per client. I've yet to have an advisor come to me and say, I want to do worse. Now, if they were like, hey, I'm shifting to a volume strategy, right? Then I would maybe, right? That's a different say. But in most cases, the average revenue right now is 7,287. At 6,000, we are at 1,158 in profitability, right? If we run that by revenue, it's going to be a little bit better or a little bit worse. But in general, if you have like $1,000 profitability, it's not awesome. And then we look at return on time. So what's our return on time? Right. If our average revenue is $6,700 and our average advisor hours are eight, that's assuming that the inputs are right. Remember, the reality here suggests that they're not. Then my average return on time would be under $1,000 an hour. Right. So that's how I always look at what's the current average and then what would the ROT at $1,000 minimum be, right? If it's 8 hours, it should be 8,000. And I go, yep, that. So notice how they all start to generally point you in a direction. Hey, my average is this and my return on time should be, will almost always get you in a direct, like it's going to kind of put you at a certain number, whether or not you're comfortable with that number. Right. That's the real work is, I think, as Adam can tell you, having gone through that process, I always tell people to really manage the inputs, like get honest with yourself, ask your team, because what happens invariably is when you don't like the outputs, you'll go back and be like, the inputs were wrong. And I'm like, no, the inputs are about as good as we can get them. We just don't like that the output is not aligned with our reality. But that surfaces, this is the hardest but best part. It surfaces where the opportunities in the practice are so that you don't have, hard work is a tax for not being willing to make hard decisions. I want you to write that down somewhere, put it on a post-it. Hard work is the tax for not being willing to make the hard decisions. If you look at bigger firms or if you look at mistakes, right, that you reflect on and you're like, oh, if I had done this or if I had just been willing to do that, we can often look back and realize that 80% of the hard work, we decided, we chose our way into it with our compromise choices. So the goal of the client profitability in this month's call is to really highlight why and how this is so informative to your setting up your ideal practice. So you set up your model practice in quarter one, what does that practice look like in the client profitability analysis, right? That's what we're trying to move to. And you, Matt, will not have one iteration. Adam doesn't have one iteration. He right did that big fee raise, got really clear, niche, add an advisor, opened the niche a little bit, went back to fees. So first thing he did when he hit capacity was what? Hire another advisor. They hired Kate to start onboarding, right? Get ahead of the curve. First thing you do when you get busy is you look at your client-based performance. Because if you solve for underperformance, you can make the same or more money with no more clients. So we'll talk about some of the, yeah.
Quick question. There's two comments in chat and I responded to one of them, but just when you look at the expenses of $443,000, that's a manual entry that you put in there based off of like a client. Do you know, in this example, is this inclusive of like a replacement cost of an advisor?
Yeah, this is everything in your P&L. So this isn't just staff or overhead.
But there's a question. So for solo advisors out there, or like what we would consider quote unquote lifestyle practices that maybe don't have themselves on payroll.
Yes, you're going to give yourself fair market comp.
Okay,
so that's the level set.
We want to make sure that make sure that we are level setting and having consistent conversation, or that we're talking about consistent variables in this equation. To Steph's point, and this is what I put in chat. If you're solving for enterprise value of the firm, you have to include a replacement cost in the calculation of expenses. Because if you sell your business, someone's going to have to get paid to do the work that you're doing in the business. This is a profitability calculator.
I'm going to raise the bar on that. This isn't even about enterprise value. This is about optimizing your income. Yeah. If you're like, oh, I'll just put in 60 grand because that's what I'm taking right now. You're not giving yourself an honest assessment of how that would be like me putting half of the octane in the car and then being like, it's going to be fine, right? We want that honest assessment that tells us how the client base is performing so that we can do what we need to do, which is solve for it. Because the sooner we solve for it, right, the easier it is to grow it. So that's one example. And again, I could dig into 19 things, but we're really looking at, right, what are the big ticket items? Here's another, this is a $500,000 practice, probably pretty similar to a lot of yours, 59 clients, right? So we're roughly, what is that? Roughly $6,000, 6,000 or so, 7,000 per client. So a couple things I noticed on this one, no advisor hours, none, just didn't put any in. What is that a sign of? Got no idea.
Not aware.
I so have no idea. There's so much uncertainty running around in my brain. I'm not even comfortable guessing. That's the, like, truly, right? All of you who've done this kind of guessed, right? You're like, two meeting, right? Probably best guess. Like, this tells me this person's going to have a value issue because they're not sure how they're spending, right? There's just some hesitation there. So almost guarantees we have that too much for, right? We're doing too much for too little progress. Like that all by itself says, I'm going to find stuff in here, right? So what are some of the, I didn't put the rest of them here, right? So what do you all see? What do you notice? Where's return on time? Where's profitability? If you were consulting, what would you tell this firm? Rashawn, where's minimum fee from here? Best guess.
Minimum fee should be the average revenue.
Yeah, look at that. You can do average if it's below your tier two average. So remember, ideal practice, you don't need four tiers. Four tiers says I have $3,000 clients and $8,000 clients and $12,000 clients and $20,000 clients. And if you've been around a while, you might genuinely. And that's why you have four tiers. If you have more than four tiers, we should definitely talk because you do not need more than four tiers. That's why intentionally, even though some of you have six, right, you can run two sheets. The goal is to get it down to four and ideally two or even three. So what do you notice about those tier ones, right? It's ideal clients and everybody better than that, essentially.
Pretty much.
Right? Because if it's your minimum and your ideal client, why would you take
which is the key? You had like to Steph's point, it's everybody else with the asterisk of assuming everybody else meets your minimum, which there opens up Pandora's box as well. So, well, how do I set my minimum? Well,
so here's a growth observation. Anyone notice anything about the tier one and the tier two clients? Look at the profit per client. Look at how many there are. So there's 11 tier ones and 12 tier twos. When someone has a lot of tier one clients that are really, really big, they usually have far fewer of them. This one doesn't. It's pretty evenly weighted. What does that tell me about the growth machine for this firm? Do they have the ability to operate in that tier one space effectively already? Matt, absolutely, right? If it were one, I'd be like, all right, we got our toe in the pool. We can try and crack the door open. We got 11, 12, and 18, and 18, 16, my glasses on me. I got a fuzzy contact and no glasses, so you have to bear with me. Truly, I'm like operating in a handicap. So if 25% of my client base is already ideal, that tells me I can absolutely lean into that side of the client base. Like, I'm not going to have a problem growing here. I'm not breaking new ground. I'm just doing more of what works. So I always look at tier two, and the average and return on time are the three variables I look at. So tier two is 7,000. If we look at the average, let's just, right, it's going to be around there somewhere. And then like tier one. So I would set the, right, the new minimum at, right, 750 or a million. And then I would, that would be my new, right, tier two. And then everyone above that is going to have, so I'd have my core awesome service model. And then I'd have my specialized service model for people who are larger. If you have a niche or a differentiator like Adam, that larger is really easy to plan out. Hey, it's going to be, they own a practice and we're going to do business stuff. If they're a retiree, quite honestly, it just means that you love them a little bit more and you make more money. Like, there is generally not a lot of extra work to go around. And that's one of the nice things about a retiree practice. The upside of a retiree practice is it's what I call skinny planning. That is not to take away from the substance and the value of it. There's just less to do because they've lived through all of it, handed you a bunch of money and said, don't lose it. The downside for, and it's super scalable. The downside for some people is it's just not super challenging. Some people love it. Just meeting with nice people all the time. And some people are like, can't do it. Like, I need, right, I need complexity and business. Yeah. And that's okay too, right? Business owners, if you are not able to really drive into those fees, you're just going to be less profitable than someone with an equivalent retiree practice. Doesn't have to be that way. But if you're typical, you will be, because you'll charge the same. You'll do the typical stuff and you don't know how to move into that value mode of, right, defining specialized value, which is absolutely what Adam will tell you and Tiff and Jared will tell you is what people are willing to pay for. So I'm looking at this and going, hey, we can absolutely set that minimum at 750 or a million. And that's not even hard. It just means saying no to the threes and fours, which we're losing big money on. We're going to grow ourselves broke. Stop doing that, right? Every client in tier three and four is hurting us. Immediately stop that. Just stop. Hey, there's this great quote I have in my bathroom, and it says, the best way to remove darkness from a room is to simply turn on the light. Just stop taking unprofitable clients. Step one. Two, right? This tells me that there's an opportunity to go grow more profitable clients, right? They didn't put in capacity, which tells me those tier three and tier fours, I was absolutely spot on, right? When we dig deeper, they're going to be probably even more unprofitable than what we see here, right? Because we're doing this at a super surface level. So what does this advisor need to focus on before anything else? Should we go double this? Do we want to double this practice? I want to double the top of this practice. Yeah. I don't want to double the bottom of the practice. That's where the marketing, right? And the decision piece kicks in. So Rashawn, yeah, if you look at return on time for $7,000 a year, I can provide on average, right? 7 hours, call it 6 to 8 hours per client. Right. So when I see, right, 10, right, if I had 12, right, I don't have a numbers there, but that's going to be my max, right? And at that level, you should absolutely be able to provide amazing service to a client with 8 advisor hours a year. Quite honestly, you don't need that, right? And that's where you guys, as you start to build out your service models and create processes and automate things, you're going to realize that for a $10,000 client, you don't even need 8 advisor hours per year, right? Because the system is taking care of so much, you're showing up for meetings and answering questions. You can do that in 4. Or 6 on the outside. So do you start to see how the data can surface some of those issues? So all revenue is not good revenue. Yes, Rashawn.
Stephanie, so in this case, you just look at tier B and you just say that that is the minimum revenue per client, or where did you get the 750 from?
I did, because the average revenue is 7,000. So assuming a 1% fee, that's going to be an average $700,000 account. If that's my average, some are higher, some are lower, it means I can certainly do that or better. We just stopped doing lower.
Okay.
Right. Now, if we look at the average revenue per client, it's going to be lower than that. And it's going to be weighted down by those tier threes and fours. Right, which is telling me, like, first of all, 3 and 4 are not profitable. So that's clue for stop doing that, period. Just stop. Mm-hmm. There is no business case for working with clients unprofitably. Maybe if you're just starting out and $2,000 will get your rent paid, right? But right, the shift is at rent and ramen. You got to really shift that. And that's the problem. We don't tend to make the shift. So in this example, tier two. So wherever your tier two is, theoretically, there are exceptions. So this is where, right, tribe coaching calls, et cetera. Theoretically, if you have more than two tiers, that tier two is going to be kind of your bread and butter at a profitable level. So wherever you stop hitting profitability, draw the line. We have to figure out what to do with those clients. We got to change services. We got to change fees, or we got to change advisors. Those are the three options. Right. Over. And then I look at opportunity. In order to raise the revenue average, I have to have it get higher. Right. So if it's at 7,000 now, I'm going to set it at 750 or even a million, because I'm going to set it at a million and the client will listen to me, because I already have 25% of my client base at a million five and up, because that's an average. So we know we can work in that. We know we can play in that sandbox successfully. So I look at return on time. I look at tier two, and I look at revenue per client average, and that will generally, like, you're looking for something where they all kind of line up in the zip code. All right, so let's look
at, why would you look at revenue per client? Because that would include tier three and four as well, right?
Because I'm trying to improve the metric. So if I set it including them, and if that becomes the minimum, by definition, the revenue per client can only go up from here. And if I stop taking them, it can only go up. And if I stop taking them and increase the minimum, and we're not even talking about fees, right? If I just increase the minimum, then I'm now double ahead, right? So my revenue per client metric is going to go up consistently over time. And that's what you want to look at with your 3-year goal. Not is what your revenue per client now, what's your ideal practice need it to be? So, right, Rashawn, if you're at 4,200 now and your model practice is 8,000, this tool is incredibly valuable, because you've got to figure out how to, right? And you're not going to do that with clients that anything below your current average can only hurt you from a performance metric standpoint. And when we're protecting margin, to Adam's point, that's how we measure it.
And I was going to say that's the other part of this, that from the previous case study, that's what was missing. Like, the data gave the advisor, gave this case study a good snapshot as to where they're at right now, but it provides zero value from a forecasting standpoint because we don't have the capacity built into that spreadsheet. We don't have the number of hours that it takes to service those clients, both from a front office or from a front stage and backstage, right? The advisor facing time as well as the back office time. So, which is usually where advisors, myself and myself included, we just, Allison and Steph were probably wondering where I was prior to this call, because it's like, we got a call and I was finishing up with our team because we're rolling out another time study in our firm. We're utilizing a time tracking app to start documenting where and how much time we're spending with our clients, because we're starting to feel a little bit of the squeeze on what we think the amount of time that we're spending per client is versus what is happening in actuality. And there's a couple of reasons additional while we're doing this. Yeah. But my point with that is you have to be able to reconcile the dollars that the business is bringing in with the number of hours it's taking the business, you as the advisor and your support, to deliver that client experience.
So this is really where the discipline, and notice, right, Adam's making hard decisions. He's looking at, right, optimizing each income engine. He's looking at the client base for profitability, right? Before we increase costs, we raise fees, right? If we lose a couple, that's okay, right? We've protected margins and quality of life. And then, right, step two is making sure that each income engine is optimized at capacity. It can't be 100%, right? Because they have to go to the bathroom and, right, check email and have meetings. But in a service advisor role, it can be easily 2/3 of their time because they're not marketing. They're not managing. I mean, they are literally just doing client work and having team meetings. So you ultimately want to do this for each advisor on your team, which is where that team model tool comes in. If you've got multiple, right, it does this across multiple teams. So Matt, let's look at yours.
Perfect.
Right, Matt only has two tiers, which makes it a lot easier. But you'll notice something really interesting. What do we notice about tier two?
Not. Tier two, you're talking about ideal clients.
You did them backwards in my head. So we typically go but it's totally okay. It doesn't matter. I just had to adjust and I've got my glasses issues. So I'm like squeezing. Where's my glasses at? There. So tier two profitability is 1587, not 112. Why did I put 112? Right. And then tier three, which is your ideal clients, is 5800.
Yes, and I should note on this too, in response to your or in response to the comment you made earlier about advisor compensation, this doesn't I adjusted my sheet here, so it's the numbers are probably a little rosier
on this version
than what it is. Yes, and yeah. I adjusted on the sheet that I have in front of me over here, but yeah, like when I look at this, like if I just work, I kind of think that all of my clients are the same profit, you know, level of profitability. And then when I do this like once or twice a year, I'm like, golly, like a third of my business is providing 70% of my revenue. This is crazy.
Truly. And it's the 80-20. We often see that 80-20 rule play out. So to Rashani's point, right, if we look at the profitability, your best clients are 3x profitable everybody else. Where does Matt want to focus?
On the top ones.
Right. Yes. So this is where this is where we start to say, okay, what's the strategy for how we're going to grow? So in Matt's case, right, he's got two profitable tiers. One is just a lot more profitable. So Matt, if you look at your ideal practice with those tier two clients, the less profitable ones, if you keep growing them, the odds are overwhelming you don't hit your model practice.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Right. And yep.
So in this example, right, Rashani, we look at what his ideal clients are, which are 11 in an average, and everyone else is at 5. And we start to go, okay, where does that new minimum kick in for Matt? So, right, because what we're going to see is it says we're using, right, I did the math and it's roughly 70% of Matt's 1,000 hours. So if we take any more of those tier two clients, it's going to get really full. And then he's going to have some profitability if he adds in his comp. Quite honestly, Matt, right? You should be averaging in 200,000, right? A service advisor is getting hired at 130 to 150 plus bonuses and comp and taxes. So minimum you should be putting in is 200,000.
Yep.
And that's going to affect the profitability on tier two pretty a bit. So I think that's where you're going to see that number drop down to close to zero, which is code for stop doing that.
Correct. It's negative when I add it in. Yes.
So it's code four.
We don't take any more of those on.
Right. Yeah. So that's like the easy, right? At a minimum, our new line is what's our first segment of profitable clients, right? Then we look at ROT. So for Matt on tier two, it's 637, and on tier three, it's 1167. One of those works. One of those is a little below the bar, right? So again, tier two is raising its hand and saying, I'm the weak link here, right? We look at capacity. Hey, if we grow that tier two client base, it doesn't hit our model practice goals. It raises its hand again and says, I'm the weak link here. Your tier three clients are great, right? 5,000 plus, like that's wonderful profitability. So this says, hey, Matt's got to draw that line, set that new higher minimum because he's eating, he's made rent and ramen. This is now about optimizing the practice for growth, right? Matt, you can use the segmentation and fee analysis like all of you can to just roll like Monte Carlo. What would that look like? And then Matt, you're going to come to one of four strategies. These are the four strategies. Survival strategy. I need to keep doing this, Steph and Adam, because I'm not yet at rent and ramen, and that $1,500 or that $3,000 like just gets me to even and I'll deal with it later. Okay. Like Michael and I, right? If you have capital, if you have a spouse with income, if you have capital, like if you can avoid it, just go straight to the awesome, right? To the Steph, ideal and move forward. Yeah.
Before we get into this, can we pause and just see if there, I want to, Billy has his hand raised and apologize, miss that, Billy. Sorry about that. And then after Billy, we got one more question before we dive into this.
Yeah, for sure. Billy, what you got?
Yeah, I'll be very brief.
No worries.
Where I get stuck on the, client profitability analysis is I got all, the revenue makes total sense to me. I have that on a spreadsheet. The overhead is like, for example, as if I have my firm, comps the two or three assistants we use. It's like, should I reach out to find out what that is? I just get lost on calculating the expense, I guess.
Yeah, if you,
I don't want that to stop me from not doing.
Yeah, you might not get charged, right? So it's not built into your profitability. But to Adam's point, if you were to leave and take that revenue and start a firm, it would be a cost. So in your case, I would run two. I'd run your baked in costs, and then I'd want to run a realized cost if I were out on my own, because you don't want to be surprised by, right, those hidden economics, if you will.
Sorry, who did you say, Billy? Who's paying for the staff?
Our firm, and I know that we're affected by it. I just don't know the exact numbers to fill in the profit.
Yeah, is that part of the payout that you're giving to the firm?
That was my question. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So in, go ahead. I think we're going to say the same thing. So yeah, go ahead.
The top line revenue, what you think of as your split, is essentially a direct expense. It's a cost of goods sold if we're looking at a profit loss statement. So for those of you that are with a broker dealer or where someone is taking an override, your gross revenue should be the dollars that are taken out of your client's accounts, not the dollars that hit your bank account. You have to take the RIP into the consideration. You have to take the broker dealer, your override or whatever you're paying out. You have to take that into a cost of doing business, because to Steph's point, if you leave your broker dealer, whatever value that they're delivering in service platform.
Yeah. You want to know.
HR, you're going to have to pay for that somehow. So the gross revenue is the dollars that leave the client's bank account, the dollars that leave the client's checking account or brokerage account, however they're paying you. If we're RIAs, for those of us that are our own RIAs, geez, say that 10 times real fast. Those are the same thing. For those of you that are either a sub-advisor under a bigger RIA or a silo within a BD, again, that's what's going to equalize that question.
Yeah. And Billy, when you run the economics, I will typically, in private client engagements, I'll run them both ways, because if you run it right, if the way you are now, you're not including the payout, but you're also not including the expenses. It does basically say this payout covers this expense. So this is our net revenue.
Yeah.
That will give, but what it doesn't, to Adam's point, tell you is whether there's inflation or deflation in like the value that you're paying. Like, hey, maybe you're paying 50 grand, but you're only getting $20,000 worth of services, or you're paying 50 grand and you're getting $200,000 worth of services. That's a really interesting comparison, just from a value prop relative to what it would cost you to run this business outside. It will help you understand the value prop of the firm that you're with.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a, I realize that what I'm about to say sounds a little hypocritical from an advisor's perspective, depending on which vantage point we're looking at it as, but right, broker dealers do this exact same math. They know that for those of us that have high revenue clients, for those of us working with multi-million dollar clients, we are the golden geese to their profit loss, likely subsidizing a lot of their unprofitable clients. So, right, the cost, if they're providing administrative support, to Steph's point, if you have a high revenue client and it doesn't take a significant more amount to serve them, right? Let's forget about value. We're talking just about cost plus economics here. If it doesn't cost them a lot more to serve those high revenue clients, that's where, to Steph's point, you will start seeing a delta. It's like, God, I'm paying them a lot of money right here to provide marginal services that I would otherwise be able to hire internally, as opposed to paying a percentage of revenue.
Yeah. And again,
hopefully it's just that makes sense.
A business model. Yeah. So this is the thing with gross versus net payout on the BD side that gets a little confusing, but it's right. Just you're getting expenses in exchange for that percentage. So you do it with and without so that you actually see what it looks like in both of those scenarios. If you see a radical drop in profitability, right, we want to pay close attention.
Okay. Thank you.
So no, yeah, no worries. So, and if there's any other questions, I can see the big stuff. I'm a little blurry today. So if you have other questions that I'm missing,
Barbara asked, I'll go back to Barb. She asked, is return on time gross or net expense or gross or net expenses?
Return on time is so easy because it's just a gross number. Hours divided by revenue, right? So if I have a $20,000 client and it takes me 10 hours a year, my return on time is $2,000 an hour. Right. And you have clients, by the way, you just don't know it yet, typically in those tier ones where your return on time is $2,000 or $3,000, because that retiree or that business owner, when you've got your model built, it just doesn't take that much more time. But the revenue is there because of the size of their account. So you can ultimately get that return on time into the $2,000-$3,000+ range as your people, process, and platform get more efficient. And as your clients, right, going to this whole conversation, as you start up leveling the average size of the client and optimizing operations, you get double value in, right? That's how we protect those margins and that quality of life, is we're not compounding all that complexity. So when you run the analysis, we've talked about this in, you should go watch Right Sizing Client Base if you have not done that. And we kind of go through the whole process, right? Steps 1 through 5. This is the first step in the process of building out your service model, because you don't want to build a new one until you know, right, the impact of the current one. So survival strategy, right? I'm working towards rent enrollment, Steph and Adam, I'll raise my hand when I'm there and then we can do the big shift. Okay, we can handle that honest assessment. 2, you hear me talk about the container strategy a lot. The container strategy is where we take those tier 3 and tier 4s that first advisory firm cannot get rid of the bread and butter because they won't get paid anymore. That doesn't work. But we're going to draw a box around them. We're going to give them an MVP, minimum viable plan service model. What's the minimum amount? Reasonable, right? But nothing extra. And that's going to be the service model that they get. And then I'm going to focus my growth, as you've seen, right? Draw that line on the new minimum, typically tiers 1 and 2 in the ideal, right? You're going to focus all of your growth moving forward, right? So the average can only go up, making that container group less and less dilutive over time. Then when you get to a point where you're comfortable, right, Adam finds himself going through this cycle now, you have an optimization strategy, which is, right, as non-ideal client, right, as ideal clients come on and you've met your thresholds and everything's good, right, or you're getting there, then non-ideal clients. So you get a new $10,000 client, you transition out $3,000 clients. So you stay revenue neutral, but your margins increase significantly. If you can learn how to protect margin at your stage, you will not be the billion-dollar firm calling me for 6 figures a year to solve all these problems. You'll call people sooner, but you won't be building in the inefficiency because you learned how to build an optimized engine in the first place. And then this is where Adam ultimately went. I think he calls it the Band-Aid, or the right. You can pull the Band-Aid slowly and it hurts a bit, or you can just rip it off, right? So we call it the shift strategy, which is you draw that line and then you exit or sell everyone below that line in a dignified way. You give them the option. We don't say you're fired. Hey, our new model is. We want to make sure we're providing a certain level of planning. This is the level we need to do it at, right? Or here's another advice. Like, there's absolutely, going back to the right sizing your client base and the service model lessons, I promise you, ask Adam. He did the hardest thing you can do. He went to clients and raised their fees 10x on some of them, from 600 to 6,000. That's harsh. Two, he did it all in person, didn't hide behind any letters. And three, this is the killer, they wrote a check. He couldn't even hide behind the AUM. It was like, and you have to write me a bigger check. And not only did he not die, that was the catalyst for for growing a much more aligned practice for you, I would say.
I didn't even give him any more service. That's the thing. It was almost embarrassing. Yeah. It's like, I've been a charity to you this entire time. Pony up. I mean,
if you're 10xing fees, you're giving them nothing else. You're just saying, oops, sorry. And I need you to write a check for cold, hard cash. That is as hard as it gets, honestly. And Adam, remember we had the conversation and it was like, it's going to be fine. No one's going to. And then, right, we all heard the used car story. No, nobody ran out of the building. No one spat in his face. A couple people, were like, oh, what about that? Liz just went through a fee raise. She reached out to Adam and I because she got some pushback. And to her credit, she was like, that I want to make sure that I'm really clear and conscious and comfortable. So, right, Adam got on the phone, and off she goes. Like, when she met resistance that didn't feel good, she addressed it and she moved on. So the shift strategy is where you just get really clear, like, this is the new client base and I am over. It does not have to be tomorrow, but right over the next 6, 12 months, I am shifting to, right, I'm shifting fees, I'm shifting services, or I'm shifting advisors and or all three. That can be an internal shift if you are at that capacity threshold and you do want to keep those clients like Adam did. 37, I remember, right? Long conversation, right? Those 37, right? Subsidized John's comp. Without it, we didn't have, right? So it made sense because it was leverage there. That revenue could cover those, right? 20% of his time or less, but he had 80% of his time to free up Adam, right? The next question is, when John gets busy, do we keep those 37 legacy clients or do we transition those, right? Optimize that engine and then, right? And those are choices where how much optimization or dilution do we want in each engine? So a shift strategy is just drawing the line and timelining out your shift, right? 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. All right, you guys ready to practice? We're going to do a breakout. We're going to give you guys we got 20 minutes left. So we'll give it about 15 minutes. We're going to break you into groups of three and you're going to talk about where you are. I want you to get really clear. If you haven't done an analysis, that's okay. Use your gut check is usually pretty good. And then focus on, are you clear on how your client base is performing? If you're not, Bridget, what's step number one?
Get your revenue per client.
Yeah, run your analysis and see what it tells you, right? Because that will help you figure out what comes next. What stage of client base building? If Bridget's like, hey, I'm in optimization and right, I'm going to transition clients out. Like, now she knows, right? So she knows revenue is not going to go up over the next 12 months, but we can now project that. Hey, at the current run rate, if we think we're getting three of those new clients a year, we can project exactly what the next 3 years looks like without amping up the growth machine. And we can project that margin. So Bridget can fast forward and say, if I do this 3 years from now, here's what the client base looks like. Put those new numbers in and she's going to see a much better client base. And that's going to be motivation to be like, yep, that's the direction I need to be going. And then third, what's your next best step? If you haven't run a client profitability analysis, especially if you're an alumni, I would absolutely do that. And for year one, this is a staple. Let's get really clear on how that client base is performing and on what your next steps are. So with that, Allison, you want to shepherd us into them into some breakouts?
Bridget, did you get your question answered?
I'll try it in the breakout group and then I'll maybe bring it back into the big group.
Great. Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks.
All right. I will open up the rooms.
Right. While you're doing that, Adam, you had a question. How many of your clients went from 600 to 6,000? It wasn't all of them. I think there were a handful that were that low.
No, there were only, single digits that took that big of a jump. The majority of clients that I had that were doing nothing or that weren't paying anything the initial fee was $1,800. Like, it's going from zero to $150 a month. And then it went to $275, I think, 18 months after that. And then we just had some of those clients that we raised fees again on just recently. So it's an evolution. I don't want to say you're never done, but I mean, the solace that I take in all of this is PlanCorp, right? A $6.5 billion RIA. Fortunate to know Peter Lazaroff pretty well. They're just going there. They just went through a fee raise on a lot of their grandfathered clients or older clients.
Yep.
Firms, yeah, large and small, go through this.
All right, everyone back? What were your key takeaways? Somebody give me a good takeaway. Anyone figure something out? Harsh dose of reality?
Get better clients.
Get better clients. Yeah, we were talking about that. Seth Godin has a great post, Christy was saying. And the long and the short of it is, like, hey, if you don't like the way things are going, there's just one simple secret. Like, just get better clients. Just get better clients. Now that leads to a whole growth thing, and then you're busy. And the reason you're busy is because, right, it's that 80-20 rule, which is you're really busy managing usually the 30, 40, 50%, 60% of your client base that's producing 10 or 20% of your revenue instead of spending 80% of your time on the 20% or the 30% that generate most of your revenue. Let's see. Mark, I see you nodding. Where are you in your stage of development, and what's your next step?
Thank you for asking. Total mind-blowing exercise 2 weeks ago. Realized that we actually have to go out there and charge clients fees for our planning work, which is really, really good. Thanks for the therapy lesson there. It was very, very good. The second thing is definitely raise our fees with the money we manage. So an extra 25 beeps on that. Looking at that puts enough money in the pocket to be able to bring on a full-time planner, which is really, really good, which frees up more time to go after the right type of clients. Adam, thank you very much. You explained yourself very, very well 2 weeks ago. Didn't give me much leverage or maneuvering room. And yeah, there was no wiggle room whatsoever. No. And then he wanted me to go cold turkey and phone everybody and do the whole thing the way he's doing. I don't see another option, so thank you. This has been good. Yep.
Good. Yeah, good. We were, the survival strategy, the container strategy, the optimization and the shit, right? Those are just ways for you to think about. We were talking over the break with Christy as she joined in. She's done this a couple of years now. Do you know where your average revenue was when you started, Christy? Do you happen to remember?
I want to say it was probably like 8,000 probably.
And what is it now?
14.
So that's the goal.
And I had 22 knee-knocking conversations over the past 18 months that raised annual recurring revenue $91,000 by just putting change in cost structure on the agenda.
Yeah.
And not chickening out.
Yeah. Literally, this is the equivalent of walking into the circus, walking into the lion tamer's ring, opening the lion's mouth and sticking your head in on purpose.
Well, there's even some psychology, just what Christy said. And I think this is something that I changed in our fee raising conversations. We're not increasing our pricing. We're not increasing fees. We're changing our fees.
Yep.
There's a different, there's a little bit of subtle difference in that between changing your fees and raising your fees.
And Adam, I would change you to eliminate the word fee from your vocabulary with clients. We call it cost, because fee implies penalty, fine, like something to be avoided. Whereas
that's a good point too. Yeah.
Cost implies I'm paying a cost for something in an exchange for a value.
Yeah. It's a good way to think about it too.
Yeah. Yep,
absolutely. Bridget.
Bridget, you had a question?
Yeah. So I was kind of looking for a reality check of my sort of style, in that, I am in reality in the rent and ramen stage, but willing to risk savings to fuel fast and aggressive growth. Yep. So I'm leaning more toward the container strategy and like having a bigger raise in my minimum. And I just kind of wanted to like get thoughts from the group. Like, am I crazy? Or
does anyone
just try it and see what happens?
Well, first thing I would do, honestly, is just look at your client profitability analysis. If you want to send it in, I'm happy to take a look at it, right? Or you can put it on Tribe. But yeah, figure out where you want to draw that line. We were having a conversation with Christy during the break. It didn't used to be a very viable option. It really is now. You know, can you package that group of clients off and sell them to someone, right? Mm-hmm. So Christy's now average, you know, so an $8,000 for client for Christy, we just raised her fees to $15,000 in the break. So that $8,000 client, Christy needs to, she's got a few of them she needs to send to somebody. So if anybody wants to buy 3 or 6 or 9 really awesome clients from Christy, please reach out to her because she needs to figure that out. Truly, like in this community, Bridget, right? Someone has clients in your niche most, unless it's really narrow. And so those are yes, you can, what we'll call that, you know, the optimization or the graduation, right? Every new dollar that comes in, you transition out a less optimal dollar. So, right, revenue and client count will change a little bit, right? If you add one and exit three, but your right top line doesn't improve, but margin improves, which is a much more important measurement of performance and success than top line revenue. That's the underlying issue. So where's your line at, Bridget? And then for anyone below that line, which of those four strategies, if you're going to capitalize it, and that's not a bad plan. Adam and I will tell you, there's lots of decisions we would look back and be like, wow, if we knew what we knew then, now what we knew then, we would do the same thing. You just want to make sure that those new, right, that you have the ability to, if you can monetize that cash flow, so you can either keep it and use that graduation strategy, or you can potentially package up some of those clients and sell them, which allows you to have a little bit more capital, right? So capital and time are really good for going out and finding more clients. So if you want to send that in, we'll be happy to take a look at it. We've got the office hours call next Monday if you want to shoot it over, and we can add to the coaching sheet. Matt, before we go, did you get some clarity on your client profitability and how your client base is doing?
Yeah. I think my next actions, I've got a couple. I think, you know, today is fee day. I've got probably 4 or 5 that we just won't bill this quarter, and then they'll get a letter this week, that says, hey, here's your options to move on in a much nicer way. And then I think,
Jeff, you just did a letter, right? Bernstein?
I just did the brand change letter. So we are increasing fees on the bottom tier, but then I think we have 5 tiers. And so I think then next year we're going to, we increased the price on the kind of the bottom one to kind of maybe not get them in or make them a little more profitable. But I think next year we're just going to eliminate that and raise the increase up again. So.
Yeah, so there's some good letters in the library for that, Matt. Adams is in there. A couple others are in there, right? Our sample. So there's some good stuff. I think Jeff used his for the brand announcement and came up with a really nice letter. So I would start there. And then I think we talked about this on Tribe, right? If you're going to change things on people, notice is a really nice way to do it. Hey, you've been a valued client, blah, blah, blah. Starting next quarter, we're going to raise your fees. Feels like a grace period. Or if you're giving service away that you shouldn't be like, hey, I'm happy to do this time, but with the new service model going forward, blah, blah, blah. So we want to get really clear, all of you, as we kind of look at how we want to wrap the quarter. Our goals this quarter are to clarify your ideal client base. This tool is critical to that. So whatever you have or are working through picking, right now we can take that 3-year model practice. We can put it in the client profitability analysis. We can see what those numbers look like, our metrics of revenue per client, per advisor, et cetera. And now we know, Bridget, what we're moving towards over the next 1, 2, and 3 years. Hey, I've got to get from 8,000 to 14,000, right? So if Christy's goal was to go from an average of 5 to 15, right? She didn't do that all at once. She's continuously iterated like Adam. Now she's at 14. Here she is in year 3 or 4, Christy. I can't remember. 3. We're raising it again. Build it, break it, build it, break it, build it, break it. That, right, we're just giving you the best practices, how you iterate those practices changes as you grow, but the core practices, this is the wonderful thing about what you're learning, is they'll go all the way with you into the billions. These are the same conversations I have with multi-billion dollar firms. I'm not kidding. Same conversations. They are just paying a lot more for them because they're one-on-one and they have a bigger budget. Like, don't do that. Do this now and you avoid all of that. That's what I love about Limitless, is there's so much leverage here for you guys. So clarify your client base, define and deliver deeper value, right? That's everything we covered in Summit. And then service models, model meetings, surges, building a hyper-efficient delivery system that supports A, the delivery of value, but B, the realization of profitability. So there's Summit action plans for each of those. I also put in a screenshot of the program guidebook. I just want to remind you, if you're looking for something, it's the number one question we get in inbox. Where is this thing? Understandably, right? Because things have certain names. If you go to each lesson page, right? Hey, I'm working on the prospect process or the service model. There's a page in the program guidebook that shows you what the outcome for that lesson is, what the, all the resources are related to that lesson. So if you're like, oh, COIs, I wonder if any of these would be interesting. Now, if you go into the lesson on the website, all of the resources will also be in the resources tab. But if you're just looking for something quick, or you're really trying to get grounded in a lesson before you do it, you can go to the program guidebook and it will give you that step-by-step of everything, right? What are the key actions? What are the resources? So just another way for you to find things if you need them. All right, was today's call helpful for all of you? Is anyone like, oh, I have to go do stuff I really don't want to do? Anyone having that honest, thank you, Misty, I love that, honest Matt, honest. The difference between successful people, like really happy, high performing, high happy, high profit, high growth firms, the difference between them and everyone else is very simple. They are willing to do things that everyone else is simply not willing to do. They're willing to have the discipline to make the hard decisions, to design a practice that creates the results they say they want, instead of sitting back and wishing and just waiting for whatever to materialize and then working with that the best that we can. So hopefully you really see how much agency you have to exercise over your client-based performance and your profitability, and how you can use your current performance of your client base. Use the three-year model. What does it look like in 3 years, Mark, Sam, Bridget, Misty, right? When your ideal practice, if it's 125 clients at 10,000, what's that look like? Now we know what our revenue per advisor and client is. We see the gap. The gap is the roadmap for change, Ian. And then we can say, hey, is this that, like, Adam, do I just pull off the Band-Aid? Do I, like Bridget, right, implement more of a timed out strategy to make it a little bit more palatable? Or, hey, is what I'm doing awesome and I can validate that I'm on the right track and I should go grow the heck out of that top tier or two? It's really good to know. The CEO of Sara Lee had a sign on his desk that I love. It said, "In God we trust, all others bring data." We look at our practices in the aggregate, and in the aggregate, they're pretty good. But for a lot of you, they were uncomfortably comfortable. That's why you joined. So this is us lifting the hood. We've covered it in service model. We've covered it in right-sizing the client base, because this is so important. And we had this call to literally crack it open, go through a few of them so you can start to look at them the way that we start to look at them. And as always, if you need help, drop them on Tribe, right? Shoot them over with a request to be on the coaching sheet. Adam, I, Liz, Natalie, the coaching team, we're all here to help you create a really, to curate a really profitable client base that aligns with your vision and goals for your practice. So Adam, as always, thanks so much. Thank everyone for participating. And with that, go forth, make it a great week, and make sure that you calendar your next step right now. So let's take 30 seconds. If you don't have time on your calendar for something limitless this week, this is your opportunity to make remedy. When are you working on your business this week? If you've got something scheduled, great. Throw a high five or a hand up. When you're done, you can be excused. Until then, I'm going to assume that you're working on it.